Dear friends, today we continue with the Noble Eightfold Path. And this one represents right view, insight, enlightenment, wisdom. This one represents right thinking, and this one, right speech. In the five mindfulness training, we learn that right speech goes together with deep listening, loving speech, and deep listening. And right speech is free from discrimination and hate, separation. When the father sees himself in the son, and when the son sees himself in the father, they know that they are not really two persons. They are the continuation of each other. The son is a continuation of the father in the direction of the future. And the father represents the continuation of the son in the direction of the past. Thanks to the father, the son have access to all ancestors. And thanks to the son, the father has access to the future. So to link like this. And if both of them see the interconnection, the non-duality of the two, there is no discrimination, there is no separation, and understanding mutual understanding become very easy. And that is why right view is the foundation of right thinking and right speech. Right speech is what you say that goes in the direction of non-discrimination, non-separation, that has understanding and compassion. And this practice of right speech and deep listening is a wonderful instrument to restore communication. In Plum Village, we used to sponsor groups of Palestinians and Israelis to come and practice with us. And it's very difficult to get visas for Palestinians. We had to work very hard with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in order to get the visa for them to come and practice with us. In the beginning, it's always so difficult for both groups to look at each other, to accept each other. Because one group consider the other group as the origin of their own suffering. And we have asked a number of monastic members and lay members of the community to take care of these two special groups, because we have many other groups. And the first thing we do when they arrive is to help them with the practice of calming down, because a lot of emotion, a lot of anger and fear. So the practice of total relaxation using exercises proposed by the Buddha in the Sutra of Mindful Breathing to connect with the body, to release the tension in the body, to recognize and embrace a feeling of pain, anger, and despair is very important, very crucial. And we practice with them. We lend them the energy so that they can succeed in coming down the tension in their body and the pain in their mind. And the practice of relaxation and sitting and walking is very important to do so. And after a week or so, we begin to initiate them to the practice of deep listening and loving speech, putting the fourth mindfulness training into practice. So many of us sit with them. Those of us who have the capacity to be peaceful, to be mindful, to be concentrated, the number of us should be big enough in order to create a good energy atmosphere. So we practice the bell, breathing, walking, sitting, and then we ask the Palestinian group to express themselves. And the Israeli group and other people just listen. And we give instruction as how to listen. The purpose of deep listening is to allow the other person, allow the other group of people to have a chance to speak out. Maybe no one has listened to them. And you may be the first person, you may be the first group of people who have the capacity to sit quietly and to listen to them. And we are convinced that if we know how to listen, and 1 hour of deep listening, compassionate listening, can bring them a lot of relief. They can empty their heart. And maybe this is the first time that people can listen really to them. In psychotherapy, we call it empathic listening. In the Buddhist tradition, we use the expression deep listening, compassionate listening. It means that you listen with only one purpose, to allow him, to allow her to speak out and to suffer less. Therefore, during the time the other person speaks, even if there are a lot of misunderstanding, wrong perceptions, bitterness, accusation, you are still capable of sitting quietly and listen, and do not try to interrupt or to correct. If you interrupt or correct, the session will become a kind of dispute and not a session of deep listening anymore. You have to practice mindfulness of compassion. And mindfulness of compassion is to keep in mind that desire, that purpose. I am listening to him with only one purpose, to allow him a chance to suffer less. So you are protected by compassion. So what the other person say cannot touch the seat of irritation and anger in you, because compassion is a wonderful kind of energy that can protect you. So even if what the other person say is full of accusation, complaint, blame, bitterness, wrong informations, the seat of irritation and anger in you is not water, because you are protected by the energy of compassion. And compassion is there because you have practiced mindfulness of compassion, remembering that you listen like this, I listen like this, with only one purpose: just allow that person a chance to suffer less by speaking out. And that is not too difficult. If we do not practice mindfulness and compassion, the seat of anger, irritation will be exposed. And when it is touched, they are touched by what the other person said, what the energy of anger and irritation will come up, and we are lost. We will lose our capacity of listening. That is why when you sit down and listen, you have to follow your in-breath and out-breath and remember just one thing. I listen like this with only one purpose, that is allow him, allow her to speak out and to suffer less. And that is the practice of Bodhisattva Kuan Yin Avalokita. And there is a Kuan Yin inside of us. You can do it. You can play the role of the Bodhisattva of compassionate listening. You can listen to your husband. You can listen to your wife. You can listen to your father, your son, as a Bodhisattva. The Bodhisattva of deep listening is not in the cloud. He is, she is in your heart. And invite him to manifest in order to help you to listen. So any kind of bitterness, sourness, accusation would not make you angry, because you are protected by compassion. And every one of us has the seed of compassion inside. That is the Buddha inside of us. The Buddha inside of us is not just an idea. It's the reality. We have the capacity of being compassionate, of being understanding. We have the seed of forgiveness and joy and peace and liberation in us. That is the Buddha inside. We have to trust the Buddha inside and allow the Buddha inside to have a chance to operate. And just practice mindful breathing, and the Buddha will manifest and help us. And when you notice that what the other person says is full of wrong perceptions, you still smile and you say, poor person, he is victim of so many wrong perceptions. Where did he get that information from? But you don't interrupt. Your job now is just to listen with all your heart. And you say that, well, in the next few days, in the next week, I will have plenty of time. I will offer him or her information so that he or she can correct his perception. But not now. Now is the time to listen. And we listen like that. If we can listen like that for 1 hour, it will be very healing. You are the Bodhisattva of compassionate listening at work. And you have confidence in the practice. 1 hour can bring a lot of relief. You listen with all your heart, even if his speech is full of accusation, blames, bitterness, and so on. You are a beautiful Bodhisattva sitting there and practice and the group of Israelis have been given that instruction, so that when they listen to the group of Palestinians, they know how to protect themselves in order for them to be able to continue with their practice of listening. As far as the Palestinian group is concerned, we also have given them some instructions as how to speak. We say that you can tell everything in your heart, but try not to condemn, not to accuse, because that will make the other person receive the information much easier. Try to use loving speech. You can tell all kind of suffering that you have undergone. You, adult and children, your people have undergone. You have to tell us everything, but try your best to use the kind of language of non-accusation, not non-blaming, and don't show your bitterness. Just tell us everything about your suffering, and that will make it easier for the other group to receive your message. So the session will not begin until both groups have been briefed on the way to speak and to listen. And you can see already the result of the practice right in the first session. And the Israeli group reported after the first hour that they're very surprised to find out the kind of suffering of the other group looks very much their own suffering. What the children and adults on the other camp suffer looks very much like the kind of suffering that adults and children on this side suffer. And for the first time, they saw the other group of people not as enemies, but as human beings who suffer like us. Before that, they think that the other camp never suffer, they only make us suffer. We are only the group that suffer. On the other camp, they don't suffer. They just want to make us suffer. So that kind of wrong perception is removed right away during the first session of practice. And when you see them as human beings who suffer like you have, suddenly there is compassion in your way of looking. And when you look at them with compassion like that, you don't suffer anymore. And when they see you looking at them like that, they don't suffer anymore. And the miracle happened like this, right in the first session of the practice. Shall we invite the bell and breathe? One session is never enough, so we give that group another session and another session if we need more practice. And this side, practice, the practice of deep listening and loving speech, and discover and begin to understand suffering. When you see the suffering, compassion arise in you. And it is compassion that neutralizes anger and hate in you. The healing takes place when you sit and listen. Compassion is the antidote of anger and hate. And when you listen and if you recognize, you touch the suffering in the other group, compassion naturally arises. The first noble truth is very important. That is why we call it noble truth. And this group, while listening, know that there will be a chance for them to express themselves also. We will have a chance to tell them of our own suffering, the suffering of our children, and the adult. So several sessions like that take place. And they do walking meditation together. They share a meal together, which is something that they could not do when they first arrived. It's very moving to see Palestinians and Israelis holding hands and doing walking meditation. It's very beautiful. And on the last day of the retreat, they always came together as one group and not two, and report to the whole Sangha as about the progress of their practice. And they always promise that when they go back to the Middle East, they go organize Sangha, they organize practice, so that other Palestinians and Israelis can join them and practice and suffer less. So you have a Sangha, several Sanghas there. We have a monastic who is Israeli, and she helped edit a book on reconciliation. And we from time to time go to Israel. To Israel in order to offer retreats of mindfulness. I think when politicians organize peace negotiations, they can apply some of our techniques. Because peace talk organized by politicians are very different. When they come together, they only see the other group as enemy. They have never got a chance to see them as human beings. And they still believe that they are, the other side does not suffer. The other side only make others suffer. So you are afraid, you are suspicious, because you cannot connect with them as human beings. And that is why peace negotiation cannot result in anything that is substantial. I think if they ask us to come and help, we will be ready to go. And we will propose that when negotiators come, the first thing to do is not to sit down and discuss. The first thing to do is to have sessions of total relaxation. To calm down. How to learn to embrace fear, anger, and suspicion, and how to be in touch with the suffering, not only inside of our camp, but on the other camp. It takes about 1 week or 10 days pre-conference preparation, and monks and nuns and lay practitioners can come and help with peace negotiation. And then both groups will be initiated to the practice of deep listening, compassionate listening, and loving speech. And I think the result of peace talk will be much better. And maybe the time of negotiation will be shorter. Because during the process, we can remove so much discrimination and fear and anger, because we come to understand each other as human beings. We can see the suffering and the fear of the other side. Politicians are trained in many respects. But I think they should be trained on this discipline. So if you are a professor of political science, think about it. Try to bring this kind of practice into the school of politics, and bring a spiritual dimension to political life. It's very important. Every one of us has the seed of understanding, compassion, forgiveness in us. And in a retreat, we have a chance to breathe, to walk, to listen to a Dhamma talk. A Dhamma talk is like rain, the Dhamma rain. If we listen to the Dhamma talk with only our intellect, we tend to compare this idea with other ideas. But the Dhamma talk is not just ideas. The Dhamma talk comes from the living experience of a teacher, not from the ideas he has or she has learned from books. The best way to listen to a Dhamma talk is not with your intellect. Remove the intellect. Allow the Dhamma rain to penetrate deep into your store consciousness. Your intellect is like a piece of nylon that prevents the rain to penetrate in the soil. Usually when you hear something that agrees with your views, you hear something and you have some view and you bring up and compare. And if what is said agree with what you thought, you think, you said this is the truth, you accept. And when they say something and you bring something and you say it's not what I view, so you reject. So in both cases you learn nothing. And that is the work of the intellect. I think we have to send your intellect to a vacation and allow the Dhamma rain to penetrate into the soil of our store consciousness, because there are so many good seeds down there. The seed of understanding, non-discrimination, compassion. And the Dhamma talk always water the best of the seeds in us. That is why during the Dhamma talk, we feel wonderful already, like the Dhamma rain has penetrated into our being. In the time of the Buddha, many people get enlightened just during a Dhamma talk, because they allow the Dhamma talk to come deeply down and touch the best thing in them. And one of the seed is the seed of awakening, enlightenment. And during the first, second, third, fourth days, walking, sitting, breathing, and listening to the Dhamma talk, we witness to the transformation inside of us. The seed of anger, fear, and so on are not water. the other kind of seed that is positive, that are positive, I water every day. And that is why on the fifth day, the situation is different. And usually on the fifth day, we ask practitioners to put into the practice the teaching of deep listening and loving speech. We say, ladies and gentlemen, it's now the time for us to use the instrument we have received from the Buddha in order to restore communication with the person we are having difficulties with. You have until midnight tonight, we say, to reconcile with him or her. If she is in the retreat, that is very easy, because she has been exposed to good watering of the good seeds. So if you use a loving speech, you continue to water the good seeds in him or her, and then reconciliation can be very easy. And if the other person is not in the retreat, you are authorized to use your portable telephone. I remember in a retreat in Macau, the next morning, many ladies came to me during the time of breakfast and reported that last night before midnight, they had used their telephone and talked to their husband, and they were able to reconcile with them. In a retreat in North Germany, that morning, four gentlemen came to me and said, "Thầy, we reconciled with our father last night, just using our telephone." One gentleman said, "Thầy, I could not believe that I can talk to my father that way. I was so angry at him. I never thought that I can communicate, I can talk to him the gentle way you recommended. But when I follow your instructions, breathing in and out, and get in touch with the suffering inside of my father and compose the name, suddenly I hear his voice and I was able to talk to him very nicely. It has been many years I have not talked to him this way." And he did not know that that was possible, because during the first 4 days of the retreat, the seed of compassion and understanding in him had been watered by the Dharma talks. They had become more important now. That is why that night they allowed him to use that kind of loving speech. When you see the suffering inside of the other person, compassion arises, and suddenly your way of talking changes. You don't have to try. You don't try. It naturally changes. What is important here is that you can see and understand the suffering inside of him or her. And when you get in touch with the suffering, naturally compassion arises in you, and suddenly you find it very natural to speak to him with compassion. And they reconcile with the father who did not practice, who did not come to the retreat, but who opened their heart and they talk and they reconcile. Miracles of reconciliation always happen in our retreat. And that brings us a lot of joy. That nourishes us very much, those of us who organize retreats. because just 4 or 5 days we can help people suffer less and reconcile. It's very wonderful. And that is why we should not underestimate the power of the fourth mindfulness training. The fourth mindfulness training can restore communication, realize reconciliation, not only between two people, but between two groups and even two nations. If you are a politician, professor of politics, if you are in the realm of international activism, and then you might like to think about it and bring this instrument into the practice to help with restoring communication and bring about reconciliation. This is right thinking, right speech, right action. Right livelihood. And right diligence. Mindfulness, concentration, insight. Right livelihood is to select a kind of a job that help us to realize our ideal of compassion. If the job allows you to help protect the environment and help the people to suffer less, you are very lucky. Not everyone can have a job like that. But I think even if the job does not bring as much money, it's worth to abandon the actual job in order to take that, because it will bring a lot of happiness. We might have to drive a more simple car and live in a smaller house, but we will be happier because we know that we are helping with the environment. We live in such a way that the planet and the future generation will have a future that bring a lot of happiness. We should come to true diligence, and the teaching of true diligence in Buddhism is very concrete. It has four aspects. And we should have a little bit of understanding concerning our mind in order to practice it. The other day we draw a circle and we say that mind in Buddhism has at least two layers, and the lower part represents store consciousness and the upper part mind consciousness. And we know that there's so many seeds lying in the bottom of store consciousness, good seeds and negative seeds. There is a seed of despair, of anger, of discrimination. The worst are there. Hell is in us. So the practice of diligence is not to allow hell a chance to manifest. But heaven are in us too. The kingdom are in us. The pure land are in us too. So let us practice true diligence in order to give the kingdom, the pure land, the paradise a chance. When in Buddhist psychology there are 51 variety of seeds. In physics, they speak of particle, and in Buddhist psychology, we speak of seed. We don't see them, but we know that they are there. Because they used to manifest for us to see. Like in quantum physics, you don't see the quarks, but you know that they are there. The Chinese character is chúng tử, means seed. And the Sanskrit word is bija. There are 51 categories of seeds. There are good one, there are negative one, and there are those who can be either good or not good, according to the circumstance. There is a seed of anger down here. Even when you are very joyful, when you are loving, understanding, the seed of anger is always there, down there. And if someone come and touch that seed of anger, if someone say something or does something that can touch off that seed of anger, it will manifest up here as a form of energy, the energy of anger. And when it manifests here, it is no longer called a bija, a seed, but a samskara. Citta samskara. Tamham. And English is mental formation. A seed down here manifesting up here is called a mental formation. And in Buddhist psychology, we speak of 51 categories of mental formations. Anger is one of them. Mindfulness is one of them. Compassion is one of them. Formation is a technical term in Buddhism. It means composite things. Like this flower is a formation. It is made of non-flower elements, like sunshine and cloud and rain and minerals and so on. But this formation is a physical formation. And my hand is a physiological formation. My anger is a mental formation. There are 51 mental formations. And as a good practitioner, we have to be able to identify each of them when they manifest. And that is the object of the practice of the ninth exercise of mindful breathing. The other day we spoke of, we have learned the first eight exercises of mindful breathing, and the ninth one is to recognize every mental formation as it manifests. When anger is up here, you breathe in, you say, breathing in, I know anger has manifested. A simple recognition of anger as a form, mental formation. So it means that when anger come up here, the practitioner invites the mental formation called mindfulness to come up. And with mindfulness, it can recognize anger. Breathing in, I know anger has manifest. Breathing out, I will take care of you, my dear anger. If you are not mindfulness is an energy. Anger is an energy. Mindfulness recognizing anger, embrace anger, and bring relief. We are speaking about right diligence. And the first aspect of the practice is the negative seed, like anger, craving, fear. If you are a true practitioner, you don't give them chance to manifest. The fifth mindfulness training is very important. It depends on your way of consuming, that you water the seed of goodness in you or the negative seed in you. Suppose you watch television without mindfulness. You are not aware that that program of television has a lot of anger, despair, fear in it. You allow yourself and your children to watch that film, so you consume toxins, poisons. Because while you are watching that film, the seed of anger, craving, fear are water, and they manifest. And if they grow strong, it's not good for you, it's for your child. That is why the first aspect of practice is not to give negative seeds a chance to manifest. Because once they manifest, down there, the seed becomes stronger at the base. So in a relationship, we have to apply this. We look at the other person, our partner, and say, darling, I have some negative seeds in me. And if you water these seeds, like jealousy, anger, fear, I will suffer. And if I suffer, you cannot be happy. So please do refrain from watering the negative seeds in me. And as for me, I make the vow not to water them by myself. And I make also the vow not to water them in you. So this is a peace treaty, a love treaty that you sign with your beloved one, not to allow the bad seeds in us to have a chance. That's the first aspect of the practice. But if it happens that is it like anger and despair has manifested. What to do? The Buddha recommend, do something in order to help that mental formation go back as quickly as possible to its original position. The problem is not to fight it, to suppress it, but to recognize it. With mindfulness, you can recognize it. And you have many beautiful seeds down there. So you can invite one of them to come up, especially one who is opposite of this. It's like when you play a CD and you don't like that music. Why do you allow that music to continue? You change the CD. So changing the CD is what proposed by the Buddha. You have plenty of beautiful CDs down there. Why don't play them? And allow this one to go on and go on and destroy you and your beloved one. So the second aspect of the practice is, if it happens that a negative seed has manifested as a mental formation, do something to help it go home to its original place by inviting a good one to come. In the sutra, the Buddha used the image of a carpenter who used pegs in order to connect two blocks of wood. If the peg is rotten, you have to change the peg. You have to use a new peg, and you put there exactly at the spot, and you use a hammer and drive the new peg into the place, and you remove the old peg. So changing peg is what is expression using by the Buddha in the sutra. So this is the second practice of diligence. Don't let that mental formation, anger, fear, craving, stay too long. Change your city, change the back. The third aspect of the practice is to allow plenty of chance for the good one to come up. You have so many beautiful seeds, why don't you invite them? One of the ways is to come to a retreat. Because in a retreat, our good seeds have a chance, many chance to manifest. The seed of forgiveness, understanding, compassion, peace, and so on. And as a co-practitioner, you can help your partner. If you see that your partner is victim of a bad seed, you can help her to change her CD. Darling, what are you thinking? Why do I allow that anger, that fear to overwhelm you like that? Because you have plenty of beautiful things down there. And you touch the best thing in him or her so that it can come up. We are co-practitioners. We help each other in the practice. And as a good practitioner, we know how to give a chance to good things in us to manifest. And we can always say or do something to help bring the best thing in our partner to come up. You make him happy, you make her happy, and you can profit from his or her happiness. And this does not take a long time. It may be done very quickly. I remember one day I gave a talk on this matter. We call it the practice of selective watering. You only water the good seeds. And I noticed that in the audience there was a lady who cried from the beginning of the talk to the end of the talk. And after the talk, I came to her husband, and I just said one thing: "Dear friend, your flower needs some watering." The couple came from Bordeaux, and in the morning they set out, and it's not very joyful because she suffered, she cried a lot. And I did not tell him more, that is enough. So on the way back to Bordeaux, driving, it would take only 1 hour, he practiced selective watering. And he told her how wonderful she is, how talented she is. And when they arrived, the children were very surprised because they were very joyful, father and mother. So it does not take much time. If you know the art of selective watering, you can change the situation in just 5 or 10 minutes. It works. And the fourth aspect of true diligence is that if the good seed has manifest up there, try to keep it there as long as you can. It's like when you have a good friend visiting you, you try to keep him or her along with you as long as possible. The same thing is true here. If the seed of joy, happiness, forgiveness, compassion has manifested, practice mindful breathing, walking, keep it long here, because while she's manifesting here, at the base, the seed continue to grow. And that is the practice, the transformation of the base. You don't know, but down there the good seeds are growing. And next time when you need it, it can come up very easily. So this is the true meaning of the practice of right diligence. I think we should stop here and enjoy walking meditation. The children are waiting for us.